Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America podcast. I'm your host, J.J. Cooper, along with Jim Schoenert. And this week we're going to finally, after it's been a while, it's been basically the off season, but we're wrapping up our looks at the different top tens. We're wrapping up with the AL West, last but definitely not least. And before we do that, though, we want to tell you that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to the people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. Get the season started right. Visit your nearest demo house today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. And Jim, you're alongside today. You did the A's top 10, yep. Which I would imagine was a pretty fun one to do. I mean, it's a system that, for one thing, changes over pretty quickly. They promoted a whole lot of guys, but then, you know, Billy Beane's always trading, so there's always a new group of guys coming in.
Yeah, it's great to be here, JJ, on my first
podcast debut.
And well, it's been a long journey for all of us here. The first top 10 came out online in, what, November?
November, early grades. And
so we're here sitting here in late January, finally getting the last one's out the door there.
Feels good, because we're going to kind of wrap this up just in time to get ready for spring training. I mean, spring training's not far away now, thankfully.
Yeah, with the A's, it was my introduction to doing a top 30, and it was definitely one of the things that struck me. Is obviously they had all the pitchers in there last year with Anderson, Cahill, Gio Gonzalez, Vin Mazzara. All those guys are gone. So it's, you know, now it's a lot more hitter heavy in the top 10, but you know, in the 11 through 30, it's a lot more pitcher oriented. I think that's still where the strength of the organization is. And really, the other thing that struck me is, as you mentioned, there's a lot of guys that have been brought in through trades.
Number one and number two, right?
Yeah, starting with number one and number two. And then even my original number two got traded for the new number two.
That worked out nicely.
Brett Wallace for Michael Taylor. So, and then, and the other thing is just how many international guys they have. Especially on the pitching side, again, that's something that's really stepped up for them over the last few years here.
Well, one thing you mentioned about how it's kind of a hitter-heavy top 10, that's probably a good thing for them, because
definitely
the reality is they don't have many spots right now open in the, the starting rotation is pretty full of young pitchers who should be there a long time.
Yeah, every member of that rotation was, I believe, 26 or younger last year, I think. The only one that kind of skewed it was they had Brett Tomko coming at the end of the year, but other than that, everyone was, and obviously you had Anderson and Cahill, both, I think, 21 or 22 at most, and they need offense is obviously the thing, because Matt Holliday didn't, he wasn't bad, but he didn't hit like they hoped he would. He wasn't the all-star we'd seen in Colorado, so.
Or the all-star he was once he got
to once he got to St. Louis. Back in the friendly confines of the NL. So, and then when you get Michael Taylor and Chris Carter, the top of the system there, and both those guys should be in the big leagues within, probably Taylor sooner, probably at least by the middle of this year, and Carter by the end of the year, certainly. So putting, if you look two or three years down the road, those two guys in the middle of the lineup, that's just those huge difference makers.
Well, get a little bit, you mentioned Taylor. So why do you think the A's, pulled that trade? They trade Brett, as you said, your number two you're going to have, Brett Wallace, who I believe is number two in the handbook.
He is still
number two in the handbook, because it happened before, the trade happened after we finished the handbook, and you replace him with Michael Taylor. Why do you think they made that trade?
Well, I think one of the things is they had a real logjam of corner guys, especially first basemen. If you assume that Wallace is a first baseman 2-3 years from now, which is kind of what I did when I was doing that rankings, that's one of the reasons I put Carter ahead of him. So if you look at their lineup, especially when they bring back Jack Cust, so you have Derek Barton and Jack Cust at the major league level who can play first, and then you had Wallace, Carter, at the time Tommy Everidge, Sean Doolittle is another guy that can play first. That's a lot of guys for four spots when you got first base DH at the two levels. So they, you put Chris Carter in left field, they can put Sean Doolittle in right field. They can, just leave Wallace at third for a while, but it makes more sense to bring in a guy like Taylor who can bring more defensive value and is not a liability, and you don't have to worry about finding
him. He can play right if you need him to, and if not, is going to be, he played left, I know, a lot with the Phillies, but that was partly because he ended up a lot of times with Dominic Brown, who's just could be an exceptional right fielder, but I mean, a true corner, someone who's not going to have to move to the infield, got some athleticism. But I think we both agree, we were looking at it kind of going into here, we've got only four AL West teams, and one of the things we've been doing a lot of these podcasts is talking about, so let's rank them. How do you see these top tens shaping up? I think we both agree the Rangers number one.
I think they have to be. Yeah.
I mean that, and then maybe
Martin Perez is here number three. That's pretty darn good.
Yeah, you know, I mean that's the you know you basically have a the Rangers have had a system for the last couple of years that's gotten just better and better. It really seems like ever since they made the Mark Teixeira trade, that kind of you know helped turn the corner. And I mean they're still benefiting from. You know, from that trade, as far as their top ten is, in addition to the big league level, but Justin Smoke also, Justin Smoke mm-hmm. being your number two prospect is a very very good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Tanner Shepard's number four is someone who has really one of the better arms, you know, in the minors now. I mean, he'll, well,
absolutely.
He will have it once he hasn't thrown, I guess, officially a pro pitch yet. He will.
You're into our indie ball guru, so
yeah,
you could,
he did.
Judge
he,
of that.
I will say safely, he had the best arm in indie ball last year, and that's nothing against Aaron Crow, but you know, as far as just pure velocity and all, Tanner Shepard's was a step above. So yeah, but to me, the interesting guy is in a system as deep as the Rangers have. You had number five, Jurickson Profar, who. Again, they you know you talked about the A's, the Rangers are another team that seems to go deep, you know, as far as they scout internationally pretty heavily, and Profar, you know, interesting write up. He's a long ways away, you know, as a guy who hasn't yet to play, you know, official. He hasn't have you know pro at bat either, but very interesting guy to kind of watch for long term. It just seems like they have a good mix of arms and bats. They have a good mix of nearly big league ready guys
different levels, yeah.
You know, and guys who are a long ways away. So it just seems like it's really a good mix. Who do you think's number two? I mean, of these four.
That's a good question. I suppose I could say I'm biased towards the A's a little bit, but I mean, they do. I do think there's definitely a bit of a you know, kind of a dichotomy between the four when you have the A's and then you take the Mariners as well. Are both more hitter heavy, and then the Rangers and the Angels are both more pitcher-oriented. The Angels are kind of an interesting one to me because they've got... So you've got the two first-rounders this year in Trout and Grichuk, and then... You know, really, and you've got... They've got four guys from their draft in this year's top ten.
Which is not usually a good sign. I mean, that's usually the... You know, you can decode that as not much in the system, but they did spend a lot of money in this year's draft after several years of not even having first-round picks. And they, you know, in addition to that, those guys, a lot of them had really good years. I mean, Trout had, you know, an exceptional year. Now, admittedly, very low levels, but it does seem like that there is. It's even when we talk about Trout, Grichuk, you know, you've got some hitters there, but it does seem like the success of this top ten will depend a lot on the pitching.
Yes, and then when you take a good look at the at the big league level where this division is kind of going, where the you know the Angels have been so dominant these last few years, but now they're losing Lackey and Figgins, and you know when you look at their and with the Mariners are adding guys like Cliff Lee and obviously moving up, getting into contention last year, you know I wonder where this and the Rangers obviously as well. You wonder where the kind of direction this division is going to take over the next few years.
I think it's hard not to like what Seattle's doing because it seems like the Jack Zarensic came in and really, I mean, he turned the mindset around pretty quickly. I mean, the Mariners seem to be a team heading in the wrong direction, and very quickly they kind of turned that around. One of the things that jumped, I mean, they just got Felix, you know, signed to a new deal this week, which is good news for if you're a Mariners fan. But it does seem like that they've really kind of had a plan going forward. You know, they've emphasized defense. They really seem to also have emphasized that they don't want to be tied up in long-term contract, especially, I mean, no one wants to be tied up in bad long-term contracts, but the Mariners have been tied up in a lot of bad long-term contracts. I mean, Carlos Silva's contract is not one that anyone would like to, you know, to remember. I've seen something where, you know, mentioned about that now the Mariners are a team that really has a lot of roster flexibility, a lot of financial flexibility going forward, and has a good amount of talent. I mean, they've gotten off that, they had that stretch there, it seemed like basically they drafted right-handed relievers to in the first round year after year after year. Well, it seems like now that they're, you know, the system is kind of is moving to be a little deeper and a little bit more balanced.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big fan of, I mean, personally, I guess my personal cheese ball for the Mariners would be Adam Moore, the catcher, because I did from doing the PCL top 20 this fall. I mean, you know, look at their catching situation. They finally shed Kenji Jojima, and they had Rob Johnson there now. But I mean, a big believer in Moore. I mean, that guy's his defense has really stepped up from when he was in college, when he was a bat first guy there at Texas Arlington. And you get him in there, him and Saunders, who made his debut last year. I mean, they've got a good mix there.
Saunders, I don't think he's going to be an all-star maybe, but you've got to like just as kind of an all-round guy. I mean, he's pretty interesting. And then they've got a couple of guys whose prospect status may have dimmed a little bit, but Truenfeld isn't it's something that he probably got a little bit too in some circles at least maybe a little bit too much hype at one point because of how young he was. And really, if you looked at it, it was like that was his biggest selling point was he was young. Maybe now he's getting a little bit, now you've seen some immaturity issues. I guess the question is that a long-term problem or is that just something that he has to basically work through? And it'll be interesting to see that. And then Mr. K, at number 8 on the list, Greg Hallman, who a year ago looked like, hey, this guy has a chance to be a power, a pretty good athlete who's got, power that you just dream of. And then seemed like this year from, seeing the World Baseball Classic on, it was just like, wow, he's really got some problems with his approach that he's going to have to fix. We'll find out if he can. Do you think there's a chance that, he's always going to strike out, but do you think there's a chance that Hallman will figure it out, or do you think he's just a 200K guy who's going to hit 220 because of it?
Yeah, I have my doubts. I saw a couple games of theirs. They played at over in Zebulon against Carolina, and it's just, you just wonder where the approach is right now when you see some guys like that hit. I mean, obviously he's got the physical abilities, but I don't know. There's reason to have doubts. I worry about, we talk a lot about when you have guys that strike out a lot in the minors, and when you look at guys in the majors who strike out a lot, and you look at their minor league track records, and most of those guys don't strike out a lot in the minors. They, you should be able to, make contact against single A and double A pitchers if you're going to be a major league hitter. So it.
Right,
the stuff's
not going to get easier.
No.
They're going to be, I've actually heard the argument before on some guys. It's like, hey, this guy will be better when they're around the plate more. Mm. But a lot of that depends on, those are the guys often it's that they make contact, but it's not always good contact. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes I think just guys make excuses for it. But, I heard that with Chris Dickerson a lot, with doing the Reds. Like, there was some arguments, hey, Chris Dickerson will be a better hitter as he moves up because he makes, not ideal, but he makes contact. He can put the bat on the ball outside of the zone. And as he goes up the ladder, when he hits the big leagues, they're going to be around the plate more, so he'll actually make contact with better pitches. And it somewhat has, in his case, seemed to play out that way. I mean, he's been a solid hitter in the big leagues. Yeah, when you're talking about Hallman, you're striking out on pitches in the zone, pitches out of the zone, pitches that bounce to the plate. I mean, I didn't get this lucky. I saw them play in Zebulon one series, but it happened to be the series that he was had just been shut down for an injury, which probably was good news for him if he didn't want to set a minor league strikeout record. But I do think also with them, having done the Royals, Danny Cortez, who's their number 9 prospect, very well could end up being a reliever, but that was a nice haul for, they picked him up in the Unesky Betancourt trade, and that's coming into last season. Cortez was the top pitching prospect in the Royals organization. Now, he wouldn't have ranked there this year. With the development of Mike Montgomery, the signing of Aaron Crow, now the signing of Noel Arguelles, development, Danny Duffy having a great year. But that being said, he's still a guy that they managed to get pretty inexpensively, especially I think they pretty much wanted to get rid of Betancourt, and anything they could get for him was just a bargain in the process. And you look with him, it's something where, that's a nice pickup, I think, for them as well, and especially as a guy who's not their top pitching prospect by any stretch, but a nice complimentary guy.
Yeah, absolutely. One more thing I wanted to address, getting back to the A's there, was, with Mike Lanoa, obviously he was the number one guy from the international class of 08. And they gave him,
guy, you got a lot of questions about the chat.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring it up because I know he was the number one topic on my A's chat the other day. I talked to their pitching coordinator, Gil Patterson, who saw him down in the Dominican in November, and he said his stuff was still there. Everything was, the fastball was still in the low to mid-90s, curveball was sharp. But, I mean, we didn't put him in the top 10 this year. We just wanted to basically be conservative with that ranking because there's going to be time to make a market correction on that, assuming if he does, good in the AZL or Northwest League this year and tears it up. And he does have, obviously he hasn't thrown a pitch against live competition yet, and he does have a record, an injury record now.
Yes, an injury record, but also there was some concerns, it seemed like that, every time that, he was talked about this year, it was, oh, he's not that far away from pitching.
No.
And it just kept on going and going and going. Now, that may mean nothing long term, but it's not something you want to hear about a guy. I mean, that's never a good thing. It could mean nothing long term, but it's not something where that's ever a positive when you're talking about ranking a guy.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like every few weeks we're hearing updates about, he's throwing off flat ground at 20 feet or, things like that. And you can't blame the A's for being conservative with him because he's only 17 now, and obviously they've spent a lot of money on him, and there's no need to rush him. But on the other hand, as far as, making these rankings goes, we'd like to see guys that have posted some results. Obviously, that's different, when we're talking about the draft guys. We do have something to go on, and not only especially with the college guys, but I mean, we see the high school guys in showcases and everything like that, so it's a different animal.
And it is. I mean, our rankings are a blend, but at the same time, it's also true you didn't do the A's last year, we do also have different approaches a little bit. Like, again, it is a Baseball America ranking, but there is also someone's name, your name's on it. If you would have been ranking them last year, would you have had to know where he was, or you may have been a little bit more cautious, like, hey, let me see what he does, the first year he makes it to the U.S.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have had him number three. But, I mean, that's...
That's not criticism.
But
that also plays a part in as far as these rankings is that, hey, when you take over a new system, doing it is something where a lot of times you may look at it and it's like, I know what whoever was doing it before me was thinking when they did this, but maybe I disagree a little bit with this. And hey, it's a collective ranking, but the first ranking that goes in that then is discussed is your ranking and your top 10 and your top 30. And then Jim Callis, John Manuel and all discuss it and kind of may throw things back at you like, hey, I like this guy a little better, but it's starting with, the foundation of it is the the rankings as you put them together.
Yeah, absolutely, and sometimes other guys just get better.
Right.
Other guys step
Sean
up.
Sean Doolittle's
number
10. Sean Doolittle's a pretty interesting prospect.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we talked about him obviously moving to right field a bit this year. He was banged up had a couple of knee problems, but I mean, he's a professional hitter. I mean, that's part of the reason I ranked him. Another popular question yesterday was why didn't Corey Brown make the top 10? I think Sean Doolittle is a much safer bet to hit than Corey Brown. I mean, Brown has louder physical tools, but
hit tool is the most important tool.
It doesn't do any good when you're if you're batting .210. So,
if you have questions about a guy who's going to hit,
there
is no one in the big leagues who is. There are guys who are really good defensively who play in the big leagues, but I mean, especially these days, there's not an impact player in the big leagues who can't hit as far as a position player.
You're a fourth outfielder.
I mean, we're not in the 70s. Ozzie Smith could do that before he learned, to hit a little bit.
And then you had guys like Pedro Figueroa and Tyson Ross really stepping up on the mound. They're the A's top two pitching prospects now. And
Draft Grant Green, they draft Max Stassi. Those are, they trade, bring in Taylor. Really like 7, 8, 9, 10, Weeks, Desmi, Cardenas, Doolittle are all guys, I don't think that really any of them did anything to hurt themselves this year as far as prospect status, but the system got a little deeper, did it? Well, not deeper, but hitting-wise, I mean, they didn't move up because guys leaped in front of them.
Yeah, they added more impact hitters was the big difference, and then obviously Desmay steps up into that picture as well. But especially Max Stassi is a guy I'd like to talk about, too. It was hard to fill out the weaknesses portion for him. Because obviously high school catchers, it can be a crapshoot, I guess is a way to put it with those guys. But I mean, it was everyone that I talked to, from scouts to you know, their front office people, everyone just was raving about him, that he's that guy's a big leaguer, that he's, you know, he's great, he's got great defensive potential, he can hit. And the only things that are wrong with him are just, you know, what's normally wrong with an 18-year-old, that he sometimes he'll get over aggressive, he'll overswing sometimes, and he's not very fast, which is normal for
a
catcher.
Right, which is not a real problem for a catcher. I mean, that's
He's a guy. I'm really excited to see what he can do this year.
And that's what's funny when you talk about that. It is true. Like, the weaknesses section gets easier to fill out. Actually, it seems like as a guy moves up, because, you know, when you're talking about a guy coming out of high school, some of the warts that will show up aren't even there yet necessarily, because he's, you know, he's been dominating his competition. And I know scouting, you look at it, but as good as a scout may be, you know, you're not going to know how well a guy can handle. Like, maybe he has a problem with, with slider, you know, with really good sliders. He hadn't seen those yet.
No.
And that's the kind of thing that you're talking about a guy, double A, triple A. Usually it's like, when you're talking to a guy, especially outside the organization, about a guy, you know, there's a laundry list of, oh, well, he needs to do this, this, and this. And it is funny, but when you're talking to the high school guys, it's, you know, a guy
all
just out of the draft. All they've ever done is dominate. So it's like, well, you know, he really does well this, he really does well this. And we'll see about these things. You know, he's got these problems, but they're the problems of he's an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
You know. But, well, Jim, thanks for your podcast debut. I think it's been obviously we'll be hearing Jim again, because this has been a good podcast.
I hope so. I hope we get back on here.
You know, but, and we want to remind you again that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free. So get the season started right. Visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at demarini.com/demohouse. And we'll be back again next week. We actually will not be doing a top 10. I feel pretty confident, though, that we'll have a college podcast, because starting to roll out our college preview. Kind of now that we finished the top 10, we jump into the college. We'll have the college preview. And then as far as the issues, then we'll be jumping back into the top 100 before long. So we'll have our off-season wrap-up at the top 100 next week also, at the very end of the week, early next week after that. We hopefully should be getting the prospect handbooks in. So a lot coming up on the podcast. Also want to remind you to check out our Twitter feed, twitter.com/baseballamerica. And the thing to mention this week on the podcast, we also now have a Baseball America page on Facebook. So you
come
can
be
go.
Our friend.
Yeah, come be our friend. We got, I think, 1,600 as we record this, which we only opened it up last week. On the Facebook, you know, you can be our friend, but also we do post on there. Like, I try to get on there in the morning and get some idea of what we have coming up today on the website. We have, you know, discussion questions on, like, I know we had one this week on who do you think's the number one prospect, Steven Strasburg or Jason Hayward, those kind of things. We have.
Yeah, we definitely have some plans for Facebook.
Right. So there's different ways you can interact with us and interact also with, you know, fans of baseball and fans of baseball. So check us out there. You can also, to find that, you can look for us on Facebook, just Baseball America, or the other thing, the easier way probably is just go to, if you go to baseballamerica.com, click on our press room, and we have a link straight to our page. So a couple different ways to check that out. We thank you all for the download as always, and we'll see you again next week. So for Jim Schoenert, I'm JJ Cooper. Thanks and goodbye.